You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
You guys are the experts. You'll probably have to analyze that.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Kansas City, Missouri, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From my basement, where I hope to avoid carbon monoxide poisoning, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss. Welcome to 2021, boys. If I pass out, if you stop hearing from me, if you ask me a question and I don't respond, please call 911. I would appreciate that. We're still settling in to this new abode, built in 1927. I'm very close to some natural gas appliances, but I'm very happy to be with you, man. It's been so long. It feels like forever. I think this is the longest break we've ever taken.
Almost a month, right? At least 3 weeks.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been gone for, I guess it feels like a lifetime. I don't know. Yeah. It used to be that we did those recorded episodes, Dave. You remember back in the day, we'd bank all these episodes, and then we would come back with a bang. It would still feel like we were there, but we weren't. But we didn't even have that this year.
Remember the guy who owned the team in Costa Rica from Utah?
David Patey.
Yeah.
Yes.
What happened to that guy?
I don't know. Maybe he's still Alohense? That's who he owned? Yeah? No? He was like a legend. He saved the club?
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Article from 2016 has not been updated.
There you go. Good stuff.
Breaking
good
news.
Great start. Great start to this year for Extra Time. Ah, man. So today, New Year's resolutions, we will do those. I'm loving my new abode. We'll see if it stays that way, but I do miss being around you guys all the time. Does it feel right doing the O from Kansas City, Missouri, considering both of you are still in New York? No.
It feels gross.
No. Yeah, that was wrong. And honestly, I think we were kind of living on the edge with it a little bit last year in 2020, which, really, really tested us. But we were not coming to you live from Brooklyn, New York or Vacaville, California. We were coming to you from various places around the country. So I think we do have to figure out what an appropriate intro is, because I feel confident speaking for David here as well. I don't want to be part of something that opens, from Kansas City, Missouri.
I never even heard of that place.
Well, that makes three of you, the third being my wife. So we will see how that works out for me. Who knows? Maybe I'll be back in New York sooner than I thought. TBD on that one. We did get some.
Moon emailed in from Wisconsin. He's also shocked that you're moving back to Kansas. Apparently, I said it on the last show. Ben Bear was also pretty thrown off by that. And considering he talks to you most days, it was surprising how thrown off he was.
Yeah, he sent me a text that was like, "Are you serious? Did you move to Kansas City?" And I was like, "Are you in the group chat that we are all in which this has been repeatedly discussed, Ben? Like, if it's about the Knicks or about Wisconsin, you're all over it. But if it's about my move to Kansas City, you have no idea what happened."
Was that a casual segue into talking about the NBA champions back-to-back game winners? The New York Knickerbockers. Flex on them. Let's go.
I just want to say that one of the things I'm looking forward to. Before we get to, look, my brother's a big Knicks fan, but I don't know how I became one. I think it was a J.R. Smith thing from back in the day. But before we get to the New Year's resolutions for every single team in Major League Soccer, which continues to grow by the year because Austin FC is on their way in, we will do those. We will talk about what our resolution should be. One of my big things for 2021 is that I'm happy not to be sharing a Fubo account with David Goss. Because not only am I getting kicked off EPL games right now, I got kicked off an MSG broadcast of the Knicks the other night that I was watching because I had nothing else to do. And I was like, I know who that is.
Doyle.
I know who's kicking me off that.
Doyle, guess what percentage Wiebe pays of that account?
Oh, I don't want to get involved in this. Are you kidding?
An easy one. It's zero. Also, guess whose account it's under? It's not Wiebe's. And Wiebe's out here complaining.
Wow.
When do I get a new account?
Nobody's ever charged me, all right? Nobody's ever charged me.
I'm 99% sure that my girlfriend was pissed at you about trying to kick her off, and she just kept doing it yesterday.
Yeah, we were both in a battle over Chelsea Man City. I wanted to watch Zach Steffen and Christian Pulisic. All right, let's get to it. Do you guys do New Year's resolutions? Is that something that happens in your life?
Yes.
Every year. And before we get to what yours is, if you're willing to share, Mm-hmm. Why? Because I don't do them because I feel like they're just another thing that I'm going to fail to stick to. So why subject myself and my mental state to potentially more failure?
Yeah, I mean, they don't work for everybody for sure. I think most people don't keep their New Year's resolution. For whatever reason, I've had good luck with them. I think if I have that long-term goal, it makes it, like, it's how I quit smoking 20 years ago. It's how I quit, or not quit entirely, but like cut back on junk food precipitously and red meat.
Do you write them down? Is there a moment where it has to be stated by? How do you do it?
I'm usually thinking about ways to improve my life a little bit, you know, just better living on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, so, look at you.
You know, right? A cool tradition, by the way, that you should take on, which is, I think in Russia, you take your New Year's resolutions from the previous year on paper, you burn them, you sprinkle the ash on champagne on New Year's Eve, so you would do this in a year, mm-hmm. and then you drink that as a way to, like, get rid of the past year and get excited for the next year or something like that.
That sounds made up. That sounds like you just made that up off the top of your head.
I read so many articles about what to do on New Year's Eve. Also in Spain, they eat 12 grapes in 30 seconds.
Yeah, I knew that one.
I knew that one.
Yeah, I knew that one.
My wife has done that one, and she does New Year's. She does a little bit of trivia.
I mean, look, one of those sounds like a choking hazard. The other one sounds metal as hell. Like the Russian version?
Yeah, it definitely doesn't taste good. I didn't
do it. Yeah, that sounds awesome. Like, I wouldn't do it, but I would really respect somebody who does it.
In Brazil, they all wear white clothes, and then you wear colorful underwear to represent the color of what you want the next year. And then they all go to the beach at New Year's Eve, and they jump over seven waves to signify seven something, which is cool, but tough to do in New York in December.
That also sounds made up. Okay, so what's it for this year for you, Doyle? How do you stick to them? Like, guide me through this process so perhaps I can make one, 4 days late and actually stick to it. Because no less red meat in Kansas and less junk food with it's my tough. COVID literal 19 would both be positive moves for me.
Yeah. Well, last year I did 200 days of exercise and no beer and Duolingo every day.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Trying to kill me.
So I got to 188 days of exercise. I didn't manage to hit 200. So I'm rolling that one over. That's a 21 New Year's resolution as well. I did do no beer. I didn't have a single beer other than that delicious Heineken 0.0.
He was wearing green underwear before he jumped into the ocean seven times, huh? Yeah.
Matt Doyle's 2021 New Year's resolution, sponsored by Heineken. Be the best you can be.
And I can competently order off of the Spanish menu, be it, you know, Mexican or, you know, tapas or something. So I did pretty well last year, and this year it's the 200 days of exercise and no more than 2 caffeine drinks in a day and no more than 3 alcoholic drinks in a day.
I was going to say, if you roll all the beer over directly into heavier stuff, I don't know if that resolution.
It turns out that was a real problem in 2020. Got really into cocktails.
Oh, boy.
I thought that it was too dangerous to do one for 2021 based on what I did for 2020 and then the way the year went. Felt like it was just a, you know, setting myself up for a failure. But I will say mine from 2 years ago that I've still not accomplished, I'll roll in, is I would like to learn how to surf. I think that I would enjoy surfing. So if anyone has advice on how to do that, especially in the New York City area, feel free to let me know.
How many times have you gone surfing? Can I just ask that question?
Twice in my entire life.
Have any of those times come since you made the resolution?
I went once in Panama in a surf town, and I've gone once on Long Island.
Yeah. So there's your starting point.
For sure.
going surfing. Anyway, if you have any New Year's resolutions that are soccer related or just would make us laugh.
Can I give you some advice for the workout one?
Sure.
Don't do it like 3 times a week or 4 times a week. Don't make your resolution, I have to do it, you know, 20 times in a month, because once you lose that resolution, then you're done. You've lost the resolution and you no longer have that driving thing. I found that like extending it over the entire year, specifically for like exercise, it's like if you have a bad week, if you go a week and you don't work out, you haven't lost anything. You just keep going the next week. You do it four or five times. And that got me, I mean, again, that got me pretty close this past year. So
yeah, I mean, it's good advice.
If it was me, the way it'd end up is I'd be doing three a days to close out November and December to try and cram the 200.
That's good advice for FC Cincinnati. You know, don't focus on the points per game. Focus on the totality of the season. You want to be in contention, FC Cincinnati. Worry about that in August and September. Let us know what you think extra times New Year's resolution should be. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. And I've officially lost the text line in my head. No, 506-301. Whoa, wow.
301-206.
Zero MLS. Okay, I got the endpoint.
There you go.
301-206-0 MLS. That was pathetic, and that means we should start actually talking about soccer. All right. How about this? We are going to start from the back, the dead back of the standings, with 0 points in 2020. It's actually not 301. Anders says it's 401-206.
I knew that.
Zero MLS. Yeah. It just
wrong.
Everybody at home was screaming at us. 3 years
of evolution is to memorize the hot take hotline.
Oh, God, what a great break it has been. Ah, we're back, though. So we'll start with the team that had 0 points in 2020. That's because they didn't play any games. That's Austin FC. We have 2 minutes per. We'll go team by team. We've assigned most of these out to have somebody be the sort of the guiding light, and then we can all chime in. This one, though, is open season. We didn't assign Austin FC to anyone. So, Dave, what's your first stop for Austin FC? Start the clock here, Anders, and keep us honest, okay?
As an expansion team, I think it's key to set goals. Where do you want to be at the end of this year? And I think for Austin FC, it's quite obvious. They want to be in contention to win the Paraguayan championship by the end of 2021 and push from Copa Sudamericana into Copa Win. Just kidding. But I'm French. That's the best I had.
That is, yeah. Guarani is really turning into a nice feeder team for Austin FC. They're just like, hey, we get to watch Rodney Redes, we get to watch Cecilio Dominguez, and when we watch, we see like eight other guys that we want to sign, and so that we're trying to get that done. It's got to be the same as it is for Nashville, but maybe with a little bit of like a turbocharge on it, right? Like a consistent core, and which they're still building, but it seems like they're on a pretty good trajectory with, given some of the trades that they've made. A consistent MLS experienced core. Don't make boneheaded mistakes. Don't be first-year Minnesota United. Don't be first-year FC Cincinnati. Have some semblance of consistency at goalkeeper, in the back line, in the midfield. And then find like two, if you're lucky, three difference makers up top. Nashville kind of had that at the end of the year. Cincinnati has really never had that. Minnesota had inklings of that. Like, they weren't that bad in that sense. They were just so bad defensively. And if you combine those two things, they'll be in contention and they'll have the foundation they need for 2022 and beyond. And if they're lucky, maybe they get in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's all reasonable. And I would just, the only thing I would add to it is come up with a consistent and sensible style of play. And it's something that I kind of expect to see from Josh Wolf, because he, you know, worked with Greg Berhalter for so long. Greg Berhalter has a very clear idea of how he wants his teams to play. I think if Josh Wolf has that and is able to implement it very quickly, that bodes well for
I think
Austin.
They've already hit on a lot of what Weeby said. I think you can already see they're not going to make the bonehead moves, and they have an MLS core that will be competitive. They should add to it and get better, but they are already a competent team, which at least at a minimum puts them in a situation where they're not hurting themselves going forward year after year.
Yeah, we'll see how they're welcomed into the league. It's a weird year because we don't know how many fans are going to be in stadiums. We don't know how many fans will be in their brand new, beautiful stadium. Like, they had real potential to be sort of villains, I think, across the league, where other teams looked at them and said, ugh, we don't like those guys. And to me, that was an awesome storyline. I'm just not sure how that'll play out. So we'll learn about their identity and sort of what they look like, both as a club and as a squad, as the year progresses here. Let's go to FC Cincinnati. Ah, it's been a tough couple of years, FC Cincinnati. Your resolution, though, is to get a good march in at the West End Stadium, right, Dave? To really just get out there, have a couple brewskis with your friends and have a nice march. No, just kidding. I think this quote, though, from Cincy Soccer Talk, who they do a great job covering the team. It's Jacob Clary. He covers on the website. It's, quote, "It feels like decades ago since I watched an FC Cincinnati match and was comfortable watching them play the scrubs of the world." He's surely talking about those USL days. "Now we're the scrubs," he says. And that's kind of where it's been for FC Cincinnati. So honestly, their resolution should just be to be really and truly alive. And I joked about it, for a playoff push, come, let's just be a little bit conservative here, like August 15th, maybe September 1st. Just to be alive. to be in the running. And if they do that and they're relevant, it will probably be because they went out and got a center back and they also probably got a number 10. And that's basically what every team that's looking to improve in MLS is looking for. Like those two positions. Can you hit on those two? The good teams have, the bad teams have not. Jared Nykamp does say we're going and looking for that guy. They want a high profile DP, a decision maker, translation, a number 10. I am jumping all.
Papu Gomez?
I mean, I don't know if I mean Papu Gomez, but yeah. I know the internet means Papu Gomez. I mean, I'm off the Jurgen Locadia train until Jurgen Locadia proves that anybody should be on the Jurgen Locadia train. But they have just been such a train wreck, and they keep talking about how long it's going to take to get that roster back to like respectability and contention. That I like Ronald Madarita. I think it's a nice pickup for them. We'll see what Yapstam does. And now I've eaten 90 seconds, and you guys haven't talked about them. So if you have any lingering thoughts about FC Cincinnati, now's your time.
We've been ticking up. I will say, I think there are pieces there that what Zelarayán did for Columbus, the way he changed Pedro Santos's role, made Zardes's life easier. Could you see that if you got a legit 10 in at Cincinnati? Maybe with some of the guys they've gotten. I think the Matarita move is a smart move. It's MLS experience, MLS quality. It's to extent a known quantity, although part of those knowns are bad sometimes with him, but it's better than what they've had.
Yeah, I don't need to say anything about FC Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think better than what they've had is really the resolution for FC Cincinnati. Houston Dynamo, Dave, you're up. What's their 2021?
Houston Dynamo, 2020 was not the year they wanted it to be. You want a Tab to come in, create a style, have something to push into 2021. He didn't do that to a winning extent as you'd like to see. I think the soccer was a little bit better overall. Memo Rodriguez seemed to play at his best. All those things. You sell Albert Elise. You sell Mauro Menotes. I think for them, with a rebrand and what they want to do in that city, you need to use one of those two DP spots on a legitimate player who can be the face of this rebrand going forward. A player that will excite people before he gets there. Albert Elise did it once he got there, but you always knew he was leaving at some point. They need a player at some point. It doesn't have to be Reynoso, a Boca Juniors starter. It doesn't have to be someone from Club America, but it needs to be someone people have heard of, people can trust, and that's a known quantity that you're going to build around for a little while.
Mm. I mean, Fafa Picot and Joe Corona don't necessarily check that box for you. I think those are both good signings, but given Houston's history, I do not expect them to make that type of DP signing. So while I get the resolution, I think that a more realistic resolution is for Tab Ramos to coax some improvement out of the guys who are already on the team. Because I thought we saw that for a little bit, maybe in early September, late August. And then that really disappeared over the final 2 months of the season for Houston. They have to, like, Tab was a U-20 head coach, and he has a lot of buzz from that. And, he got some of those kids to play better for the U-20s than I think any of us really thought they were going to show. And he has to bring that to the Dynamo, because they're not going to go out and I don't think they are going to go out and get a Bebello type. So it's going to have to come from within. That falls on the head coach and the structure.
But even if they got like Jimenez in Chicago, who's a World Cup qualifying starter for a national team in South America. That's something that Houston doesn't even have.
Yeah, I agree. But is that going to be a guy that does what you said it was going to do, which is be recognizable to people off the jump, to build excitement? To me, with the Dynamo, it's like, figure out who you are. What is the Houston Dynamo? Do you play kids? Do you make those signings? Do you win?
Because then that would be the answer for 90% of the
100% it would be. But also with the Dynamo, I mean, Matt Jordan has a short-term deal, so you don't have long-term stability in your front office. Tab Ramos just got there. We don't have really an identity on the field, certainly not one that has translated to winning. Like, now you have a rebrand, but what is that rebrand? That, to me, is what 2021 is. Who are the Houston Dynamo? I'm not sure that they know. DC United, Doyle, 2021.
Obviously, hiring a head coach has to be the resolution number one. There have been a lot of reports over the past month that maybe Gonzalo Pineda, maybe Ezra Hendrickson, a couple others as well. There was an assistant from Man City, I want to say, who was legitimately interested. They got to figure out their guy, because we're 2 weeks from the super draft and, you know, 2.5 weeks from preseason opening. So that's number one. Number two is just simplify and play guys in their correct spots. I don't think it's a coincidence that the only time over the past three seasons when DC United looked really good was the second half of 2018. And granted, that was the Wayne Rooney bump. And that was Lucho Acosta going bonkers. And that was a home heavy schedule. But beyond all of that, it was Russell Knauss playing at defensive midfield and looking like, at that point, the third best defensive midfielder in the league. Maybe even behind like Tyler Adams and either Ozzie Alonso or Diego Chara. We were talking about him at that level. He has barely played defensive midfield since then. You know, part of that is injury, but part of that is like, why did they sign six more defensive midfielders? Why are they playing him at right back? And it's not just him. We saw them sign Julian Gressel, who's a wing back, and play him at central midfield when he first arrived. Like, none of what happened for DC United made sense between the lines. So they have to get the right coach, and then they just simplify, man. Play a 4-2-3-1 and just go forward, defend deep, do what you have to do to be compact. Don't overcomplicate this game, because you're not going to be that type of team.
And you could argue at like 8-9 positions, if they played the guys in their normal position, they'd be top 10 at that spot in the league,
yeah,
which puts you in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like they have these huge holes. Maybe center forward is the one, but the other ones you just look at and you say they have three starting center backs. They have multiple starting defensive midfielders. Now they've got Areola and Gressel, Assad, Flores, you hope will get healthy. But it feels like to your point, they have all the pieces, just allow them to play.
Yeah. We were jacked up about them last year. And then it was just kind of like, wah, wah, all year long. Head
coach.
Now
you're jacked up about Sheffield Wednesday.
Ooh, I know. I saw that rumor and I didn't know if that's true. Ben Olsen, Sheffield Wednesday. All right. Make it happen. I would love to see that in a Petri dish. Let's do it. Atlanta United. That's mine. You got to protect Joseph Martinez at all costs. You've got to help Miles Robinson rediscover himself, or if that was him, or whatever it is that allowed him to have a best 11 season. But mostly, I think you just got to give Gabriel Heinze whatever he needs to be successful. Like, whatever he needs. You know, that's basically what the Tata era seemed to be. It was like, hey, Tata, what do you want? What do you need? You go talk to the agent. You go figure it out. Get the guy you want, and they want to play for you. Players want to play for Gabriel Heinze. I think that part of this is giving him that, but also it's Gabriel Heinze getting more out of, like, six through the end of the roster, because I feel like last year they didn't get those positions, they didn't get those players playing at the level that they had before, which let them be what they were in 2017 to 19, in addition to Almirón and Joseph and the top end talent. So find a way to bottle that, and if they do that, I think ultimately, like, the top of the pyramid here is, it just have to be exciting. They have to be attacking again, because under Frank de Boer they have not been that, and to me that's tamped things down a little bit with them. I think Heinze will do it, and I'm excited to see him try.
I mean, it's exciting, but at the same time, do they have the flexibility to go out and get him whatever he wants? You know, they have three DPs, two of whom were signed. I mean, all three of whom were signed before Heinze got there. They have fewer, you know, high cost veterans than they used to, but from the outside looking in, there doesn't seem to be a ton of budget flexibility with this group. Now, maybe you can make some trades. Maybe they get an offer for Barco and they decide to take it. Maybe, you know, they get an offer for George Bello and they decide to take that, and that opens up some stuff for them in terms of allocation money. But I do think that of the ones you listed, the one that makes sense is getting more from the guys 6 to 20 on that roster, because last year they weren't very good.
And the easiest way to do that is to put Joseph Martinez on the field. This team's a playoff team already. If he's healthy, relatively, in 2021, they're a playoff team. So that alone is going to help them get a long
I mean, just his return from somebody who doesn't care how Atlanta United does, other than the enjoyment of talking about them when they're good and everybody hates them and is annoyed by them. I mean, Joseph Martinez is like a walking storyline. Just his, like, mannerisms, his ability on the field, the way he stokes rivalry. Having him back in this league is going to be wonderful. Chicago Fire, Doyle, what do we got for them?
For the Fire, it's cut out the simple mistakes at the back and get progress out of Nacho Alaceta. If you watch the Fire play last year, they had some really, really good sequences. Basically, from about early September onwards, they consistently played really good soccer, and they consistently made not just one, but like two or three catastrophic, inexplicable errors that cost them points and wins and eventually a playoff spot. And we, like, literally into decision day, we were talking about that on the pregame show. We said, the only question in the show is, like, who's going to screw up for the Fire? And then it was the left back, whose name I'm blanking on, the little Cuban left back, he, like, playing the ball directly across. Yeah, directly across his own area. Just like a perfect pass to set up the game losing goal for Chicago. That has to stop. It has. It wasn't just the kids. It was Francisco Calvo especially. He has to be better. And then Nacho
Alcantara. That's some vintage Calvo stuff right there.
Oh, it really was. It was 2017 all over again. Every time he set foot on the pitch. And then Nacho Alcantara. He's a young DP. They spent a good amount of money on him. They clearly bet on him, as opposed to Georgi Mihailovic. Mihailovic was a much better player last year. Alaceta has to make that bet look smart. If Chicago are going to be, a top five team in the East, he has to be a very, very good player. Last year, he was not. He was very poor.
Am I the only one? I mean, I've forgot. Well, there's so much news we haven't covered because we haven't been around. Did you talk about on the final show the Georgi trade, or did that come after, Dave?
No, we talked about it.
It
had come before.
I'm loving it.
It's a big move. I think for them, I agree with what Doyle said. And one of the things I'll say about every team is every foreign player, you give them 2 years in MLS. That's been proven now. Even if they're bad year one, if the scouting and the clubs believe that that's the guy, you have to give them a second year to settle. And this was a team that's massively redone. But the last four moves they've made have all been 21 and under players. So they're stockpiling a little bit of young talent that hopefully can push players in different positions. Two along the back line, as well as the Bulgarian winger, that you hope can, maybe if it's not this year, give you something going forward, because they haven't really used their academy to the best.
Yeah, the League of Nations approach to their foreign signings has been very interesting too. They're coming from all over. There's no established market for the Chicago Fire. How about Real Salt Lake? What's it for 2021, Dave?
This was the one that I trusted the most, that I was going to say identity, because it is so up in the air. They need to get an owner. When they get an owner, that owner will establish what their identity is. And I don't think it's a given. I know RSL is a small market. Salt Lake City is a small market. But in MLS, looking at what Columbus did last year, you can't guarantee what that means. Looking at what Sporting KC does, I don't know that that totally affects spending or the way a team's going to build. But I just hope RSL finds that identity and then be the best at it. And if it's going to be this, we go out and sign guys who people think are over the hill, Giuseppe Rossi, Rubio Rubin, Justin Miram, all that, then go out and get like the best knee specialists in the country. Go out and get the best sports science people, become the Phoenix Suns of MLS, become AC Milan of MLS, and get guys to extend their careers. If that's what you do, if it's young guys, if it's the academy that they're going to trust, then give 40, 50% of your minutes to academy guys. Whatever it is, I want them to lean all the way in, but none of that's going to be decided until they get an owner.
I love, by the way, I got completely hoodwinked because I've been so checked out by the Pablo Mastroianni news by Alex Vahara of the Salt Lake Tribune. He said, oh, hire confirmed Pablo Mastroianni. And I was like, time out. The man who yanked on parts unknown to troll this team in the early days with the Rapids, then coach the Rapids in this rivalry is going to... What happened to Freddie? And of course, I was wrong. He's an assistant coach. He just needed that thin mountain air. But I completely agree with you. Like, that is the storm cloud, Dave, hanging over the club. Who is the owner? Who sets the trajectory? Who gets the culture overall back to a place where like people really want to be a part of it? And it's not sort of like, ah, oh, God, what's going to happen next? I mean, that's where this club was for all of 2020. And it was painful to watch, but they have dedicated, awesome fans. They have a good setup. Like, I've been to their facilities and it's like awe-inspiring stuff. They just have to figure out who they are and try to lean all the way in. How about the LA Galaxy? They know what their identity is. It is rings culture, basically. So their resolution, again,
there's
a lot of...
Is that allowed if you can't win a game?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. But they still walk out to the field and look at the trophies that they can't compete for, all right? They still have that in front of mind. They've got to get a head coach. This goes right along with the DC United side of things. I basically assumed that Greg Vanney would just pop out as that head coach within like a week of him leaving Toronto FC. But I don't know what's going on here. Maybe it's a negotiation ploy on Greg's part. Maybe they're trying to figure this out. I don't know. But to me, it's hire a head coach and it's hire Greg Vanney. And I think that trickles down to both the existing and incoming roster that you'll build. You saw what he did with Toronto, whether it be the depth that they developed in conjunction with Tim Bezpachenko and the moves he made, but also Greg having a really big hand in those things. And then you got to, I think, sign Christian Pavone permanently. Mm. You got to find a way to get that done. He's like, you know, I like Legette. I like Dos Santos, even if he can't stay on the field. Maybe Chicharito will be something, but probably he won't be if you don't have Christian Pavone. So find a way to get that at a palatable price to you. $20 million is not a palatable price, clearly, because they haven't come to an agreement with Boca Juniors, but it doesn't sound like he wants to go back, and it doesn't sound like anybody wants anything but this deal to get done. So whatever number it takes, find one that fits your budget and get it done.
Yeah, I can't argue with any of that. Pavone, if you can get him, like, sign him to an 8-year deal. He's a phenomenal player. Like, maybe he's not quite MVP caliber, but he's a best 11 caliber winger who will get you goals and assists for as long as he is out there, and he will make your big investment, which is Chicharito, that much better. So you have to do that. Absolutely. Like, I think they have to sign Greg Vanney as a head coach and give him a certain amount of control as well, and then allow him to get something out of those academy players, because the Galaxy should have an FC Dallas level academy, and at times on the youth level they have had that, but has never for them translated up to the first team. That has to be one of whoever the new head coach is, happens to be, it has to be one of his jobs, is to make that a reality where they can go out every year and sell a guy for $5 or $10 million, because there is plenty of talent in Southern California to do that.
I'm still living out of boxes. I'm sleeping on a mattress on the floor. We only have a mini fridge, like the mini fridge, not the like nice double size mini fridge. And yet I still have my LA Galaxy shrine set up. Hire Greg Vanney. Sign Christian Pavone. Make it happen. All right. Inter Miami. Dave, speaking of turmoil, Inter Miami. David Beckham says he's going to be a big part of the soccer side. What's their resolution for this year?
Well, for David Beckham, it's clearly to acquire Patrick Segers and sign Breck Shea to an MLS contract. That's what David Beckham woke up and said that's his number one. But I think as a resolution, the first thing you want to do this year to get the year started right is to make sure your head coach is aware whether or not he is currently employed by you or if he's unemployed. And then you should probably hire someone else to do that job. So that would be number one. Number two, I went for a small one here because I think there's a lot of things broken and I didn't feel like dealing with it. Bring back Lewis Morgan. They have him on a 3-year deal. There's been rumors from teams in Ligue 1, in the championship, SPL, all those things. He was kind of the only thing you got right last year. He's not a best 11 player, but he was good. Bring him back. Why not do that again? And then you can worry about fixing the other 97 problems that you have.
So I also don't know what's going to go. Like, you know, Paul McDonough is gone and he wore a lot of hats there and he had a lot of experience building expansion sides. I don't see that there's like a, you know, is it just David Beckham now making those decisions? Again, the head coach doesn't seem to know, or didn't at one point, whether he was the head coach anymore. Like, who is making these decisions? Because somebody had to say, hey, bring back Breck. And I'm assuming like somebody's an art collector within there. I would love to have a left-handed studio on my wall here at the new studio in Kansas City. But I also have a question. Like, did we ETR curse David Beckham and Inter Miami? Is it possible that in 5 minutes in a hotel in February, right before COVID hit, that we cursed Inter Miami? Or more specifically, that I did?
Yeah. You were the only one who was there, Weeby.
By saying that they were going to be really, really good?
No, by interviewing him. By him.
David Beckham did say he uses this podcast to get all of this.
Exactly.
Which could be the problem.
PSA to David. David, get Lewis Morgan back. Figure out who's your GM / technical director. And let your head coach know what the situation is. We'll see what happens with them. It's a double feature here, Dave. You have a back-to-back. We're on to the Montreal Impact. What do you think?
Yeah, don't panic. Trust your process if you're the Montreal Impact. You came out last year. The best segment.
Hold on. Their process is to panic. That's always been the process.
No, Andrew. This is Thierry Henry. He walks with swagger. He is the essence of calm and cool. He came in. He had a plan, methodology of building from the back. And then a month into that, the world ended. They then proceeded to spend the last 6 months not training, traveling, being at home with their families when they couldn't train, or in a hotel in New Jersey. There was no point to build. At no point could they build on what they did. I love the idea of the moves they've made. Kamal Miller, Mason Toy last year, and then Jordy as well, of getting young domestic players that you believe in. So the back line's already better. Mihailovic is already an upgrade on whatever else they were playing in midfield. And Kyoto played well at center forward, so maybe Toy comes off the bench this year. Whatever it is. If you're Montreal, do not panic. this is the year you thought last year would be. Allow the process to play out over the course of this year.
Yeah, that's the only resolution that matters for Montreal, is to give it time. You don't hire Thierry Henry to say, oh, you know what, 2 years, one of which was entirely, almost entirely ruined by COVID, is enough. Like, let this man build something at the club, use the players that he clearly has some hand in investing in. Guys, like, it's a really interesting thing to see them spend as much as they did on Toy, Mihailovic, and Miller, who are young domestic players with a lot of potential. So give him the rope he needs to develop those guys and find what might be a market inefficiency. And from that, build the next 5 years of Montreal, mm-hmm. instead of thinking only in 18-month increments.
I don't know why, but when I was talking about panic in Montreal and their process, two words were running through my head the whole time. Marco Schalabom.
Oh, boy.
Ugh. What a classic. What a classic throwback to Major League Soccer.
Fanny, who they pull out of retirement every 6 months when they realize they need
big, a big Rod Fanny guy in these parts. Vancouver Whitecaps, Doyle, what do they need? What can they do?
Week-to-week consistency, just in terms of their shape and principles of play. Like, they, if you watch Vancouver, 1 minute they're high-pressing, or one game they're going all-out high-pressing in a 4-3-3, and the next game they're a low block 4-4-2 team, and then they're playing five at the back in a mid block, and you know they have Baldissimo, so they'll be great at hitting long diagonals to release wingers or an overlapping fullback 1 week, and then you don't see him for 2 weeks. Like, none of it makes sense. None of what Mark Dos Santos did last year made sense, but especially the pressing. And I get it, because Cavallini is a monster. He is such a good pressing center forward. You want to weaponize that somehow. But at times, he was the only one pressing. So he would go, and then that would string everything out, and then Vancouver would get absolutely gashed. They have to have a consistent approach week after week after week next year. And honestly, they weren't bad when they were playing in a low block and just being a counterattacking team. So I think that's it. Like, don't try to outsmart the game. Accept the fact that you have, like, a middling talented team, and use their energy and their commitment and Baldissimo's ability to spread the field, and be really good on the counterattack first and foremost. If you're really good at that by, like, July, then you can add some more bells and whistles. But find that one thing to be good at first, instead of trying to be great at everything and then failing and missing the playoffs yet again.
And to your point, it looked like they had that idea last year, and then you'd see 2 weeks where it went away, and then it would come back. It seems like they're trying to get younger and more athletic. That's been all the rumors. A few young South American wingers that they've talked about. One of the things I heard this offseason from someone who worked with Michael Baldissimo, which I'd never really noticed, they said he was, like, by the numbers, the most athletic player that has ever come through the Vancouver Whitecaps Academy.
Oh, stop it.
That includes Alphonso Davies. So
that's not even worth saying. That's not even worth saying.
That was what I was told.
Not even worth saying. Stop.
Oh, Michael Baldissimo train is 25 cars long, and it is rolling down the track.
I love Michael Baldissimo, but stop with the athleticism stuff.
We just hit like 8 different Michael Baldissimo full name mentions. The trajectory, just the upward, the hype level, we are blowing it out of the water.
FC fans listening confused and think we're talking about his brother, so that's why we have to go.
Good point. Name. Great point. Good point. San Jose Earthquakes, the peyote of MLS, as one pundit coined last year. Doyle, what is it that they need in 2021? What should they focus on?
There are a lot of different options here, but the big one is just get a match-winning attacking midfielder. And we saw this team make the playoffs last year and then put up 3 goals on the road in the playoffs while sort of scrounging and playing Carlos Fierro there, maybe Andy Rios there a little bit. Neither of those guys are number 10s. We saw them play some really good soccer over the first year and a half under Matias Almeida with Magnus Eriksson as a 10. And Eriksson's like a useful player. He's not a match winner, and he never was. If they go out and get a DP number 10, and they have room for that now because Vaco's gone and Danny Huston came off the books. Thank you, Austin. They should have the budget to go out and do that. And if they get a guy who is like Babello or Zello Ryan level, or even a half step down from that, and add them to this attack, they will score so many outrageous goals and play the most outrageously entertaining soccer this league has ever seen. So just like go out and get that guy. Find that guy, bring him to San Jose, put him in central midfield underneath Wando, and watch the goals pile up.
So curveball, sounds like Matias Almeida is going to go back to the Chivas well on this. Javi Lopez is the rumor right now. Attacking midfielder, winger from Chivas, about, what, 25, 26 at this point? And was like one of those dudes who I think was super promising when Almeida was there and everyone thought would go to Europe and hasn't and has kind of like floundered at that. He's not any of the names Doyle mentioned in MLS.
No, he's had kind of a similar career to like Zeller Rayan, because Zeller Rayan was this, you know, highly rated young player, and then he went to Tigres and was like a backup.
Yeah, but Tigres was good.
Yeah, that's true. Chivas
so he was behind great players.
Oh man, did you is Samurai Soccer, I see this in your write-up in the rundown, is that a thing that people say, or is that something that just you have started saying?
No, that's a thing people say.
I really like it.
I have never actually said it out loud, so.
Okay, all right, well maybe we won't again, but I'm just imagining Matias Almeida with his hair pulled back with a katana. It could be cool. New England Revolution, Doyle, it's a double feature for you here. What do we got?
Learn how to defend set pieces. I'm not going to say it cost them a trip to MLS Cup because the Crew were just so much better than them in that Eastern final. But if New England could defend set pieces, especially corners at even a league average competency level, they would have been hosting that game. That's what stands between New England and being like an A-tier MLS Cup contender this year. If they're better on restarts, there is a very good chance we will see them in MLS Cup.
I also like already you have Luis Caicedo coming back at central midfield, and they've gone out and gotten this guy, Wilfred Kaptoum, which at least just gives you some legs in midfield, yeah. Because that was one of the things, as good as Heal was, it was almost too much responsibility. And then no one was really covering ground at times behind them. And that was their biggest weakness. So it seems like they've identified where they need to get better. And that's still leaving. It sounds like another attacking player that Bruce is pretty high on bringing in to play on the opposite wing of Bo or wherever it is along that front line.
Do we need to throw in some Tejan Buchanan talk here just to like satiate Charlie in case he's listening, or how should we handle that?
I mean, it could be a resolution is to just move him to right back full time, because you could see his skill. Like there's a reason he was a highly rated winger coming into the league, but there was also a reason why he didn't produce as a winger. He just wasn't good at unlocking set defenses. Then we saw him move to right back, where he was able to, you know, as modern fullbacks do, he was able to more often attack scrambling defenses, and he was a weapon. Like, he was an absolute revelation. So maybe part of it is make a resolution to commit to that, because that Tejan Buchanan that we saw in the playoffs, like, if Brian Reynolds is a $6 or $7 million transfer, Tejan Buchanan's 5 or 6. Right, he was awesome. So
unless it's he needed a chance to get up to speed at the pro level, and playing at right back allowed him to do that, and now he's able to do a lot of those things at winger.
But I mean, but he's had 2 years at winger. Yeah. You know, how many years do you get up to speed if you're playing for a contender? It's not two. Right.
TBD, this is year two for Nashville SC. I'm up. For me, the resolutions for Nashville, I still wonder what it would have been like, and this is all completely moot, doesn't matter at all. Mike Jacobs and co are like rolling their eyes, being like, just shut up already. What it would have been like if it was a normal year for them. So for me, their resolution should be to maintain their level, and then just they got to find a consistent goal scorer, ideally two.
Wrong?
Why?
Because they didn't need a consistent goal scorer. They needed a consistent chance creator. Like, Rios' numbers on a per 90 level, even into the playoffs, were pretty good. And Cadiz, I think he produced, I would say, in line with expectations given.
So rewind then. So then you're saying that Hani Mukhtar is not that player. You're saying he's more of a, like, underneath forward or better on a wing.
I think so.
Which I'm fully on board with. I think that's probably the case. He does not look that comfortable surrounded by numbers and having to play with like a guy in his back in midfield.
I think that Mukhtar and Leal actually underperformed more than Cadiz and Rios did. So I would think the resolution has to sort of reassess what you need out of that central midfield playmaking role, and maybe adjust the roster accordingly. Because Mukhtar, he had that great, you know, little dribble against Toronto. And he had a banger of a goal against Miami, but he wasn't a consistent force week to week as a number 10. Now, maybe we're jumping the gun, right? Because maybe halfway through the season, he finally gets his feet under him and he looks like a $10 million player.
And playing off Cadiz might be what he needs, because if this is a team that's going to play in a low block, they don't need someone to pull the strings at the 10 because they won't have the ball for those moments.
Yeah.
It's counterattacking. And can Cadiz hold up that first ball that he can run under and run off of, and then Leal can get into the transition game?
They don't like it. They don't like it when you say play out of a low block, David.
Well, they're expansive. They're very expansive. But that goes back to the goal-scoring side, because if that's the case, I don't look at Rios and Cadiz and think the level that they got to this year, they match again in a somewhat – look, it might not be normal. Let's just be honest. In a somewhat, like, it'll be normalized in our new normal. But I think they got to find a way to just to score goals. And maybe that is a new 10. Maybe that's a better place for Mukhtar. Maybe that's Cadiz, Rios. I don't know. We'll see. Got to score more goals. New York Red Bulls, new coach. Gerhard Struber is in. He's got, what, one game in the books in the playoffs? Dave, what's the 2021 resolution?
Get back to who you are. We know why they hired Gerhard Struber. He's a guy who's deep in the Red Bull system from Austria, believes in pressing, wants to play that style of soccer, bring it back to what it was when it worked for you, and it can work for you again. That's the number one thing for them, is don't overcomplicate it and say, well, how can we be the best team in MLS and win everything? Be the best pressing team again in MLS. It won you 2 Supporters Shield. It got you competitive. Get back to that. And I think there's still big holes on this roster, but all the pieces that they are worth keeping fit into that. And so they've got guys who are ready to step into that style.
Yeah, I think the style. No, the style's part of it. But I think getting back to also what defined the Red Bulls from, 2015 through, like, I would even go back further, maybe 2013 or 12 to 2018, was the ability to take players, whether they're younger players or journeyman types, and get them to play at their highest level, to get back to that internal culture of improvement from their guys. Now, we've seen that from some of them. Brian White, I think, surpassed expectations over the last 2 years. Caden Clark obviously was like a thunderbolt when he came on. But Christian Caceres is basically the same player at 21 that he was at 18 or 19. Tim Parker has regressed. None of the fullback, like Kyle Duncan, has a lot of talent, and you can see going forward he could be a weapon, but he's still so naive defensively. So they have to rebuild that culture of internal improvement that sort of went away midway through the 2018 season, because unless they change their approach to the transfer market, that is the only way that the Red Bulls can compete for trophies, is to get those guys, to get the next Aaron Long or to get the next Matt Miazga or Tyler Adams, and make sure that they deliver as MLS level pros.
I agree with Doyle 100%. I think one of the reasons they were able to do that was because they were looking for players that were different, because they were playing a specific style, and they were putting those players in comfortable situations. And you look at guys, make Tim Parker a hunter again, take him off his back foot and have him pressing high and attacking the ball, bring Aaron Long into the attack, allow Duncan and Pendant to play high, which is what Stubar has done in his teams before, and be creative attacking players for them. I think a lot of what Red Bulls were able to do in those years was because of the clear identity they were pushing everything into.
They also had leaders, so that's something that they probably need to find in whatever form that's going to be. I mean, you go from Sasha and Dax and even Felipe and on down BWP. Clearly, we'll get to him when we get to the Columbus Crew. Let's talk LAFC, though. We did not talk about, well, let's just, hold off on the timer real quick, Anders. Free space. Oh, it's free for a reason. Just get out your bingo marker and just pound it down a million times. Into a CONCACAF Champions League final they went, and out they went losers. Any thoughts on that game? I was watching with my brother while we painted a couple rooms in the house. Did I tell you that I moved to Kansas City? And I just told him the whole time. I was like, it's coming, man. It's coming. He's like, nah, I think they got this. I think it's going to happen. He has no, he doesn't really care. He's a Sporting KC fan. I was like, nah, it's coming. It's coming. It's coming. And yet it came.
Yeah.
Free space. Disappointment.
Yeah, feel free to just take out my heart. Stamp on it as you will. Rip out my veins. Destroy my soul. Year after year. Thank you, CCL. I appreciate you.
just cutting your ligaments just for the fun of it. Just waiting until you can stand up and run and just cutting them right back down.
I'm watching CCL. I think we talked about it on our last show last year. Like LAFC are awesome. They play the best soccer I've ever seen an MLS team play. They could have and should have won every game they played in CCL. But at the end, in the final, I think maybe the four or five worst players on the field played for LAFC. And in moments like that, that's where you can lose. And we talked about going to MLS Cup. Like, that game was not about weaknesses. It was about strengths. And at a lot of times for MLS, CCL can be about those one or two weaknesses. And I don't know that it like specifically showed on any individual moment, although there was a boneheaded reason they came up with the corner kick. Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah, but and it killed them that they lost Atuesta. I think if they had Atuesta, it's a different game. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
If they had BWP, it's a different game. I think of that late chance where Rodriguez skinned, was it Chaka Rodriguez, down LAFC's left, and then he hits that cross right to the near post, and that the little Ghanaian kid that they signed, Opoku, he's just standing there. He's not even making a run. Like, if that's Bradley Wright Phillips, he's making that run to the near post, and maybe it's 2-2. It was really disappointing. It reaffirmed what we thought about LAFC, which is that they can play really great soccer, and they did it consistently over the course of the CCL run, save for the final 20 minutes against Tigres. And that's their resolution for 2021. Bring that consistency to MLS week after week after week. And at the same time, they have to add some depth. They hit with Murillo. It looks like they found a really, really good Walker Zimmerman replacement. Tristan Blackman was excellent at right back during the CCL run, though I don't think that's his long-term home. They have a South Korean right back on their radar, according to rumors. That should help, but they need to add a couple more pieces there. They need to figure out if they're going to sell Rossi or Rodriguez or Atuesta, because we all know what the economy is like in the middle of a pandemic. If there's a lot of money coming in, that could maybe change the way you think about how you want to build your team. There's a lot to figure out, but undergirding it all is that every week you have to do what you did in 2018, where they were remarkably consistent and or 2019 rather, where they were remarkably consistent and focused and imposed their type of soccer on basically everyone they played. That had disappeared last year. They need to get it back for 2021.
Well, part of that is the best player in the league not being around, right? Like, Carlos Vela, just as an individual, helps you impose another team, makes all the players around him better. So that's, again, to go back to the Joseph Martinez resolution, like, wrap the dude in, wrap him in bubble wrap, get him in the training room, don't play him if there's a niggle, like, make sure that over the course of the year, whatever you have to do to keep him on the field, you do that, because he changes everything for that team.
Yeah, I still, when you look at, so I think Atuesta will be the biggest loss when they sell him, because I think he does something no one else does, and Rossi and Rodriguez are incredible, but Rossi more, but you can find people who do that. But the spine of this team, when you look at it, Segura through to K, Blessing, and then I consider Vela at that top piece. They have a ton of consistency, and I think three of those guys in Segura, Blessing, and K are young and are going to be there for a while, which makes it, gives you the ability to make these other moves and build around them.
Everybody's groaning because we went way over 2 minutes on LAFC.
Oh, so we had to do a little CCL, actually.
Yeah, we had to get a little CCL in there. FC Dallas, Dave?
So there's a really easy one, which is get Paxton Pomykal healthy. He's a difference maker. He's special. He, even with the ability to sell Brian Reynolds to Juventus, is the best prospect you've brought through and could be at the MLS level, and then you could sell him on. So that's number one. And then number two behind that is figuring out your balance. And I think especially in central midfield, of youth versus experience. And they've continued to sign veteran central midfielders while also having promising young central midfielders that they're trying to push through. And I think they've done a really good job across the rest of the field in giving young guys minutes like Pepe did at center forward, but also having experience, although Frank O'Hara didn't perform the way they wanted at the end. I think midfield's the one where they haven't really gotten the perfect formula yet. So you still have to figure this out. They've done most of their work already, though. They needed goal scoring on the wing, and they needed a replacement at center back, and they've already brought in both those guys. So I think for Dallas, they have an idea of what they need to do to win MLS Cup, quite honestly. And I think they're already on the road.
I'm going to ask you this, Doyle, because you've long been sort of the Paxton Pomykal hype man slash, you know, hey, look at this guy. Look at this guy. Look what he can be. Look what he is. Get him healthy. Can he be healthy? We can't answer that question. How do they best use him this year to actually get what we've long said he has out of him?
Yeah, use him as a number eight because he's equally good distributing the ball and winning the ball back. His engine is nonstop, and his ball security it's not Nagby level, but it's other than Nagby. I can't think of many more ball secure central midfielders in this league. So use him as an eight. Have him connect the defense and the central and the attacking midfielder and really all of the attack. I think that's his best long-term home. And then the real resolution, whether Pomykal ever gets healthy again or not, is to develop some final third kill patterns. If you look at the way Dallas play, they have a lot of really technical players. They don't move in concert off the ball. And it's been 2 years of that now. And I know they've had a lot of turnover and a lot of new faces that they've tried to integrate. Well, it's year three. And I don't think that's an excuse anymore. I think we need to see them turn. We have the ball in a good spot into we created a really good chance that we finished. And now it's 2-0 and now it's 3-0 because that's the type of team that at times they look like they should be.
MLS.com's own Minnesota United. Up next, a nice year for them. Nice year for Adrian Heath, Dave, in 2020. Oh, sorry. You know, I'm in such a hurry to get to Minnesota United that I skipped over the Rapids, who, you know, MLS.com loves as well. Also a team that we really enjoy. That's me. For the Rapids, I think it's pretty clear. They said it. They know it. It's go from, quote, young, promising team to a consistent playoff team and a contender for a trophy of any sort, honestly. Like, whether that be MLS Cup, probably not the Shield, I wouldn't think, for them. Whether they try to make an Open Cup run, if that comes back. Whether it's just like we can beat on a somewhat believable level the best teams in the league. I mean, that's, I think, the most difficult leap, probably, to go from like, yeah, we'll probably make the playoffs to, no, we're legitimately a really good team. And no matter who we play, we believe that we can win and we show that. They need to do more on the DP front and like the elite attacking talent front, in my opinion, to get there. So Yunus Nnamdi was their DP last year. He was like the 10, but really, and I don't know, he's more of like a wing player, in my opinion. Two goals, four assists, not enough. Just not enough. And then they have those open two DP spots. And Porg Smith said in sort of the end of year wrap up, like, we don't think about DP slots. We think about the way the team fits together. Like, that's all well and good, but you see the best teams in the league, the ones that are there at the end, winning things, competing to win things, have that difference-making player who inevitably, because they are that player, gets paid DP money.
If we're going to bring up with Houston, they're not going to sign that guy. Colorado's not going to sign that guy.
Okay, that's so fine. Sign like it. That is what he's saying. I know, and that's tough to hear if I'm a Rapids fan. So sign a guy who produces, like, hit on a TAM signing or two.
Yeah. I just think it's clear that Nikola Jokic could be the greatest number 10 / number 9, like Berbatov-style scoring goals. I think it's easy. Just go over to the Nuggets and say, hey, we need this guy now.
Imagine if he had to run 90 minutes to do anything.
He looked fit this year. Are you kidding?
Oh, yeah. He worked out 200 times last year, Doyle. He at 199, he wasn't in shape. But when he hit 200,
to be fair, he like did 3 days at the end just to catch up. So like most of those days, he was chilling. But
I think the resolution has to be just to keep the trajectory, because what we saw from 2017 to 2018 was improvement. 2018 to 2019 was improvement. 2019 to 2020 was an improvement. 2020 to 2021. It has to be like the Philadelphia Union thing. They're at the stage to me where the Union were heading into the 2019 season, when the Union went from, hey, this feisty young team made the playoffs, to, hey, this feisty young team made the playoffs, won a game, and caused some real problems for the best teams in the league.
Okay, so go back to the signing front. How did the Union get there? It was also their young players making massive leaps. I will not deny that. But you're talking about Shabilko, who came in and scored double digits. You're talking about Jamiro Montero, signing him perfectly. Like Alejandro Bedoya, he's a DP. Like those are the sort of signings, I think, to continue that trajectory that they probably have to make.
Bedoya was on a team that was bad. right? That wasn't what took them over the top. And I would say for Colorado, they would look at it and say, well, we brought in Jack Price, who we think is a high level MLS starter. Their belief has to be Nomley will be better this year. Because what you saw from him was he has an ability with the ball to change the game. There was zero production from it. But he was an international player coming over during a pandemic to a new league, a league where guys like Sebastian Blanco, who would have won MLS MVP last year, struggled in their first year. So you have to believe he's going to be better. And that's to the point for Doyle of trusting the process. But that doesn't mean, Weeby, that they don't need to hit on a TAM, whether it's a winger or a center forward, to give them help for young guys to not have to feel like they have to carry the game.
Okay, that's fair. Minnesota United, on to the Loons.
Trust the center forward. Adrian Heath, the best center forward in MLS, hates every other center forward in MLS. It sounds like they want Amaria back, which I think means he trusts him. If he had been healthy, he would have played him. I don't know why else you'd go for him, but every year for Minnesota, they have cycled out their center forward, and that's the big position of need for them. I think they can still cover from Molino's loss with the pieces that they have in Lode, in Finley, whatever else they're going to do on the wing, because Reynoso's so good and he's going to change everything for them. Otherwise, even if Ozzie Alonso doesn't come back, sounds like with Will Trapp, I like their pieces in central midfield to cover there. And they showed this year they could cover for Ike Opara when he was out. So if they get Opara back, they're at a whole new level. If they don't, they can still manage over the course of the season. They need a killer at center forward.
Do we think that the Kevin Molino, and this is me just being a hopeful hot boy homer, do we think that it's actually going to be that he doesn't come back? Or did he use the old Instagram negotiating ploy to sort of try to set the market a little different way? And if it doesn't come to him, I still stand by what I said on one of those late night, you know, Brown Liquor special shows, which is like, if I'm Kevin Molino and I'm Minnesota United and Adrian Heath, I don't let things get in the way of a good marriage.
I still don't think he's coming back. I said it then as well, before he'd even put that up. Can you guys still hear me?
Mm-hmm.
I said it then. It seems like there's a cap on what they can pay him at $600,000. I still think that another MLS team would give him more than that and can make it worthwhile for Minnesota if he's not going to leave the league. But after what he did at the end of last year and his injury history, he has to try and get every dollar he can out of this contract.
I completely agree, but what team is going to give him a combination? And maybe Minnesota's not. Maybe they're saying, no, we're not doing it.
Give him a two-year deal? You're not married to him.
But who's going to give him more than that with his injury history?
No one.
So why not stay in Minnesota?
They can still pay more than Minnesota to do that.
Maybe. I don't know. Kevin, stay in the Twin Cities, man. Stay with Bobello. It will be the best 2 years of your life, okay? Portland Timbers, Matt Doyle, what do they need?
They need to learn how to kill a game off. The Timbers were brutal in the final 15 minutes, and a lot of it goes to Gio Savarese just pulling the entire defense deep and putting 11 men behind the ball and like losing control of the game. And I understand like part of this is the way they played had to change after Sebastian Blanco got hurt. And then obviously in the playoffs when Eric Williamson got hurt, that changed how they played against Dallas. But that doesn't change the fact that they need to be able to do this no matter who's on the field, because if you look at the final 15 minutes of games, they were the worst team in the league. And that included in the playoffs where they gave up that 92nd minute goal to Ricardo Pepi on like a pretty simple ball over the top. So for a team as talented as this one is, and they showed it by winning the MLS's back tournament, they need to add that final piece if they're going to get the club's second MLS Cup. And that piece is not anything other than learning how to defend a lead. Because when you have this much attacking talent, even with two DPs, you know, hurt with ACL tears, they have a ton of attacking talent. You're going to have a lot of leads, and you got to do better with them. And if you don't, you saw what happened last year in the playoffs.
I resolve to welcome Sebastian Blanco back with open arms. Like, I missed him. We missed him so much. You talk about the attacking players that, like, give you, like, you watch them and you can imagine something special happening all the time. I know that the Timbers were still good. I know that they still had that ability. But him. And then the other thing for me is, like, they need to figure out what they're going to do with Jeremy Obobese. Like, maybe it is that he's just going to be, like, shuttled in and out of different positions. And wherever the hole is on that given day, that's where they're going to play him. But he's been productive in just about everywhere they've put him. I would love to see more of a clear trajectory/plan for him that isn't just, like, fill the gaps.
Weeby, did you come into this show and you weren't going to welcome Sebastian Blanco back, and then you resolved to
do it?
Were you just going to Blanco was going to come back from an ACL tear, and you're going to be like, "You're not welcome here."
Well, it wouldn't be like that. It would just sort of be like, you know, a quiet. No, you're right. Yeah, that wasn't really a.
No. It's good that you have a resolution.
Hey, it's not in the spirit of New Year's resolutions, all right? Sometimes you just got to set up the easy ones to knock them down. They're not really my thing. I usually fail, so I need ones that I can easily accomplish, and that is one of them. Here's a failure moment for me. NYCFC, I have this completely blank because I don't know what it should be because I like what? Matarita's gone. Alexander Ring is gone. Maxi Morales is older.
You have to resolve how to learn how to play without Maxi. Maxi's amazing. He's you know up there with that Ladero level number 10s in this league. Maybe not quite at that level, but close. And when he has been on the field the past 3 years, NYCFC have been like the equivalent of a 70-point team. They've been a supporter shield caliber winning team. When he has been off the field, they have been collectively a chicken with its head cut off. They've had no idea what to do or how to play. And so they have to figure out how to play without Maxi. I didn't like. There's a lot of other stuff that matters, but to me, that matters so much more than all the rest of the stuff. Because as you said, he's not a young guy anymore. He's 35.
And everything they've done in this offseason hasn't changed that, right? Like Alex Ring is great, and it was a genius pickup for Austin FC. But it doesn't make NYCFC worse because they have depth in that position. And Matsurita is a good MLS starter, but their other three starting defenders are coming back, and they believe they have left back already figured out. So I think for NYCFC, everything is the same as it would have been in August of 2020, probably in March of 2020, which is that's the one conversation, and Eber, I guess, as well. If you can get him healthy, maybe that takes you over that line when you don't have Maxi available. But they have a ton of pieces everywhere. It just never comes together at the right time at the end of the year.
It just kind of feels...
The rumor is that they will get Santiago Rodriguez, who is the starting kind of a number 8, kind of a number 10 for the Uruguay U20s at the 2019 U20 World Cup. City Football Group got him. He hasn't officially been loaned to NYCFC, but like maybe if that happens, that seems like the logical solution for filling that gap. Sorry, Weeby, I stepped on.
No, I was just, and this kind of goes to what you guys are saying, is it just sort of feels to me like NYCFC are in that sort of like precipice transition moment, and that transition is away from some of the guys that were like, you know, Ring was a rock for them for a long time, and Dyla moved him around and played him in different positions, but it kind of feels like that's the transition, and maybe it's sort of not away from Maxi, but in addition to Maxi, well, I just don't have a clear read on NYCFC. And that's honestly, that's often the case for me.
Agreed. And you talk about identity. They have one of the deepest rosters in MLS every year because they have one of the best scouting networks in the league because they have one of the best scouting networks in the world. But what you said about those top four or five guys on the top four teams in MLS in the playoffs in the regular season, they don't have an idea of who they want to put in those spots. So let's say they get the guy Doyle says, is it for a year? Is it for two? And that's kind of been the issue. Maxi has been the only experienced player that they've spent on to be around the group. And if you want to win in MLS, you have to invest in those guys. If you want to just be a great feeder team and be competitive, then you can continue doing what you're doing.
Orlando City, big year for them in 2020. Finally, into the playoffs, Dave. What is their 2021 resolution?
This was a tough one because 2020 was so good. And so it was hard to say they really need to get better here. And getting Antonio Carlos back would have been number one. They already got that done. There's been rumors about them going for attacking players. And I think having a match winner that's not Nani would be big. If you think that's Chris Mueller, that's fine. But you have to make that decision because he wasn't that at the end of the playoffs. And he struggled in the knockout games in the MLS's back. And then he got hurt. So if you think it's him or DK or Pereira, fine. But if you don't, you have to go out and get that player. And that's really the only big thing I see.
Nani's a match winner?
Because maybe not, but he wasn't at the end of the year.
Yeah, this is 2 years in a row now that where he started off on fire, and he was awesome at the MLS's back tournament, and like probably the best player on that team in their run to the final. But then he kind of disappeared by early September, and you know, kind of memorably didn't perform in the playoffs. And that's exactly what happened in 2019 as well, and now he's a year older. So I think the resolution has to be more about learning how to share the burden so that Nani isn't run into the ground come October. So that the Nani that we've been seeing in April, May, June, July, we get to see that Nani down the stretch in the regular season and into the playoffs, because he's been out of gas for two straight years. And that's often what you get when you have guys who are in your mid-30s as your crucial players. So they have to manage his minutes better.
So one of the rumors we've heard is this guy Franco Servi at Benfica, who would also be a winger, and that would fit into that as well. Whether it's, you know, then you have three wingers you believe in between them two and Mueller, and you can rotate them all through, play them the minutes you need to play them, and whoever's on form gets the starts in the playoffs. But yeah, that's the big one that they need to figure out.
I feel super targeted every time Doyle's like, look, he's 35. He's basically washed. I'm like, ah, yeah, I did shovel some snow and my back is aching right now. Sporting Kansas City, speaking of, that's mine. Of course it is. You got to convince Tata that he doesn't need Alan Pulido in the national team. And then you got to convince Pulido's muscles not to pull. Those are pretty big. Now, honestly, though, they got to hit on a center back or a center back pairing. And honestly, just they need one thing, and that is consistency in that back line. All their good years, and there are many, many, many of them, have been marked by one thing. And maybe Sporting KC fans will come in and correct me here, but based on my memory, and that is consistency across that back four, whether it was like the Beisler, Kalon, Myers, Sinovic years, or then they had, you know, Beisler and Ike and really the same guys, and Zusi went back. But there's always, in their best seasons, that back four has been consistent. And I think the rest of the team is pretty good. Like, they went out and signed this guy out of Turkey, previously of Nice, Remy Walter. He's like a 25-year-old. They say he's going to play the six, which is good because I think Ilya's... Huh?
Did they say the six for sure?
Yeah, that's what Peter said, I think. He said that he could play both, but they're looking at him more as a six. So, and I think that's good because I think Ilya's best years in Major League Soccer, no offense to Ilya, probably behind him. Having someone a little bit more mobile there, a little bit more of a ball winner is good because Roger's not going to be asked to play as much. Maybe it allows Busio to move up the field a little bit. But ultimately, it is the back line. It has been the back line. The attack is fine, especially if Pulido is around. So Stian Gregersen in Norway has been linked. He's at Molde. We'll see. They haven't done that well with their overseas signings. But they need to hit on one of those guys, and they need to find some consistency, some chemistry in that back line. And if they do that, I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be at the top of the Western Conference.
I don't disagree with you. Sorry, I got stuck because once we started talking about Remy Walters, I was like, where's Johan Kroze? So then I went and Googled him. And
oh, tell me. I want to know. Where is he at?
He is playing in the Belgian second division.
Oh.
Worse than the Belgian first division, in case you didn't know that. But I agree with you. The wingers are still dangerous. Pulido still could be one of the top strikers in the league. They have options in midfield as well, whether Gutierrez can go or not. You have Kinda, you have Busio, you have Roger. So I think center back, and this is for a lot of MLS teams, if you are good at center back, you are competitive. If you are great at center back, you can be an elite team. And Kansas City doesn't have a great center back right now.
Yep. All right. Toronto FC, Doyle.
Toronto FC, first of all, hire a head coach.
There's a couple of these. A couple of those are floating around. Huh?
That one.
Well, maybe it wasn't just us. Everyone took 2 weeks off. So
exactly. Oh, it's beautiful, too. Yeah, all these GMs were like, head coach? We'll worry about that in 2021.
That's future me's problem.
They got to get everybody fit, and they got to figure out how to keep them fit, because injuries play a part every single year. We've seen it, you know, in playoffs, we've seen it in regular season. It happens to every team. It just happens to TFC more. The amount of injuries, whether it's an older guy like Josie or the young guy like Ayo Akinola, both of them had hamstring injuries. Michael Bradley is no longer MB90. We saw Marky Delgado break down the stretch this year. Alejandro Pozuelo broke down. He went from being, you know, the best player in the league by far for the first two thirds of the regular season to like barely having an effect by the final half dozen games or so. It's just like Justin Morrow, his career has been magnificent, but the look at the last 2 years, he has not gotten onto the field with any sort of consistency, and it's been team-wide. And like, yes, there have been, you know, some structural issues, but it's mostly been soft tissue. If you look at the types of injuries that these guys are picking up. So they have to, you know, take a look at the, I guess, the sports science department and figure out what's going wrong there and figure out how to keep their best players. And not even just their best players. They have to keep figure out how to keep their players more available. And then whoever the new coach is has to figure out a sensible rotation to make sure that the guys who need rest are getting rest. Because it's clearly like it has, those types of injuries have stood between Toronto and several trophies, including last year's Supporters Shield, 2019 MLS Cup, 2018 CONCACAF Champions League. That is just brutal.
Also, MLS needs to make a resolution to backload the schedule with Montreal TFC games so that Patrick Vieira and Thierry Henry can have a true bro hug embrace that we all are waiting to see for when he signs on at TFC.
Mm. Making me dream on that one. Do we, like, have we heard any more rumors on Toronto? Like, I haven't heard any rumors.
Dwayne before. Rollins tweeted today that an offer is out to Vieira. Mm. It's the first thing I've seen in since we went off.
There's also something, I think Christian Dyer tweeted that Steve Cherundolo has been interviewed as well. So, familiar names.
Yeah, take them both. All right, Union, Dave. Nice one in 2020 for them, and then some big business. Brendan Aaronson says that Jesse Marsh greeted him at the airport. I'm assuming bro hug. I'm just making an assumption there. And then Mark McKenzie, I don't think it's official yet to Genk, but it looks like he is on his way for about $6 million.
It seems like no matter what, he's gone for this season, and it's gone for a good number. Brendan Aaronson was their first homegrown sale, so now the question is what's next? And so you've got two things for Philly. How do you follow up with Supporters Shield, winning team by being competitive, but also now the bigger picture, which is their philosophy, that they're going to develop elite talent, play them and win in MLS, and then sell them for big numbers. Now you're looking at the second class. What can that group of players do? And you have Anthony Fontana, who played a bit last year, and Matt Real, who I think is going to be a good MLS player, but not in that category. Otherwise, we don't know who the next group of guys is. They've got five homegrowns that are coming in. Personally, from seeing all of them a few times, none of them are ready really to play at MLS yet, at the MLS level. So over the course of this year, they need to start to cycle some guys in to the MLS roster and figure out, okay, who are the big gems coming through? Because for Dallas, they sold Reggie and then Brian Reynolds stepped in. So for Philly, who comes next? Who follows what these guys have done?
Big, you know, look, Brendan came on this show and really hyped up Paxton Aaronson. So I need multiple Paxtons to hit. I'm not saying he will, but I need it. I want it. I want to see. I really want to see what happens with the success first team side. Because I think these two sales are like among MLS outgoing transfers, among the best we've seen, just from like philosophy to on field to hitting your number really in the transfer market. So I'm that part of it, they've already succeeded. It takes time to develop players and give them the opportunity to play well enough to get those transfer fees. I want to see what happens in 2021 from a first team perspective. Mm-hmm.
And they're losing two best 11 players. And now I don't really think that Brendan Aaronson performed at a best 11 level. It was a $10 million sale to a Champions League team. So seeing what happens at the first team level. And I think part of that has to be a resolution to not panic when the Union are worse this year. They're going to, we've seen six straight years where they've taken a step forward. There's going to be a step back this year, unless something changes drastically with their recruitment strategy.
Also, no one really wins back-to-back Supporters Shield. So a step back could not even be abnormal for MLS as long as they're still competitive at the top, which when you look at it, they brought in Glesnes last year, I think, to be a starter, and they believe in Elliott as a starter if they don't have someone else that comes in. And otherwise in the midfield, they're pretty well covered. So Philly could be worse in the standings, but I think as a team, they're going to be pretty similar.
Seattle Sounders, I let producer Anders handle this one. I mean, the first one is like, hey, again, you didn't think you'd be saying this, but figure out your keg coaching situation. And it increasingly seems like that situation is just what the numbers are between you and Brian Schmetzer. TBD, maybe not. Maybe we'll be surprised on that one. But that probably is number one, although I think Garth Lagerwey can figure it out on his own as far as player transactions and will. I think maybe the big one, and maybe this is not one that has always been at the forefront for them, is they have an aging but incredible core. So how do they keep that trophy window that has been open for so long open while also finding a way to capitalize on some of the investment down the line that they've made in the academy and USL? You know, AOC Leyva, whoever it might be, are there players there that can take another step into the first team? And I'm not saying start necessarily. I'm just saying start to establish themselves more at the first team level, but also get what your fans and your organization have come to expect, which is the ability to win trophies and the competition to do so. So how do you marry those two things? And also what's going to happen with Brian Schmetzer in the near term? I think they'll get back together, obviously, but we still don't have any news on that.
Yeah. Those Sounders kids that you mentioned had a lot of success at the youth level, obviously winning the GA Cup a couple of years ago. Some of them projected as very good pros. None of them have really impressed that much at the USL level with Tacoma. And while Leyva and Atencio and to a lesser extent Double R and AOC have gotten minutes in MLS, none of them have really moved the needle. So you have to ask whether it's structural with those guys, whether it's just the Sounders, because of what their ambitions are and because of how veteran heavy they are not the type of team that can integrate young talent efficiently. Or maybe those guys aren't up to the task.
Yeah. But also McKenzie and Aronson didn't make a difference at the USL level. I think for teams that pump a lot of young guys on the field, it's hard to be competitive, but you're still looking for what you can glean out of them. And you've seen AOC score some goals and Marlon Vargas and guys like that. So I get what you're saying, Doyle. I'm not disagreeing, but I think there's still space there to say you're getting performances from guys you can push into the first team.
All right. On the rundown, we had planned for, you know, a normal show. And I want to say we're at an hour and 20 minutes right now. So we're doing what we normally do. Let's do Columbus Crew.
You're going to keep adding expansion teams, you got to keep adding minutes to the show.
It's fair. Hey, we've been gone for a long time.
25 minutes. Otherwise, we would have been under an hour. Yeah.
We've been here a lot. We haven't been together in a while. Come on, just let it marinate, Anders.
We're not even talking Guardado to Charlotte in this.
We had to spend 5 minutes talking about our own New Year's resolutions, of course. All right, Columbus Crew SC, Doyle, that's you. What do you think? What's the resolution?
Run it back. Just obviously what they did in the playoffs speaks for itself, and they were great in the MLS's back tournament. Up until, they couldn't quite solve it was almost like a box and one the way Minnesota played against them. And they just didn't quite have enough to solve that in the round of 16, but they played some of the best soccer that we saw from anybody this year. And they have a team that is, mostly composed of guys in their prime, get a little bit of progress from Abubakar Keita and Aiden Morris and Sebastian Berhalter. See if BWP can give you 1,000 good minutes to rest Jossie a little bit. Maybe Luis Diaz takes a step forward on the wing and run it back. It's not broken. Don't try to fix it. Just make sure that your young players improve and your veterans stay healthy. And we'll probably be talking about the Crew very late in the season in 2021 as well.
And the young players improving, one, I think that they have had good academy teams, and you've seen that from Aiden Morris and Berhalter when they've stepped in. The other is, I talked to Bez a few weeks ago, he calls it the cap monster. Like, when you're good, everyone hits their bonuses, and it's hard to keep a team together. The way that you're able to get around that is by having young homegrowns who produce. And he sort of got it in Toronto, where he could cover some with Delgado and then Osorio and guys like that to fill in when he couldn't afford to pay the experienced players anymore. But for Columbus, if you want to keep this going, you're going to need to improve those young guys. The other one this year is win CCL. Why not? This is one of the most established 11s we've had. Zalarian's been there. Nagby's been there. They should be the one. Let's go.
I see you just opening your jaw. I see you opening your jaw
it
for
took
the
me
haymaker.
4 minutes to go from exactly. The LAFC disappointment to this. I'm back.
Just showing the weakness. Just like, yeah, just crush me. Just crush me right here. Just take me down on the mat. Yeah, look, I wish for that too. What do we think of BWP's late career sort of bounce around here?
I love it.
I was disappointed he didn't stay with LAFC for that CCL run. I straight up think they would have beaten Tigres if they'd had him. And I'm surprised they didn't bring him back, given how productive he was during the regular season for LAFC. But he's found himself on another contender now. And he's obviously not there to start over Jossie, but Jossie's obviously not going to be there every single week because the U.S. national team has 30 games in 2021. So he's going to get a lot of minutes. And based upon what we saw last year, the BWP that we're getting in the 2020s looks a lot like the BWP that we saw from 2013 to 2018.
All right, let's end it with one piece of mail, and that's actually going to be my New Year's resolution for Extra Time, which is that we devote at least 5 minutes a show to the mailbag, but we just start flapping our gums and we just run out of time, and that's not fair, and that's not how it should be. 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. I'm looking right at this one off the top, Dave. I see it. It's a good one. It brings back a legend.
He was kind of following Dortmund versus Braunschweig in the German Cup. And Braunschweig has both a Wiebe and a Bear on the pitch. Danilo Wiebe and Marcel Barr. But the A with the dots in German is pronounced and can be spelled as A-E. Still trying to figure out which one is more trash.
Good point. Good point. Bring the trash in. Love you, Ben. Hope you're having a good holiday. Hope you're listening, man. That's it for us. Hit us up. Let us know you want us to talk about. We will have some news, I assume, given all the head coaching vacancies.
Also, the transfer window's officially open in some countries. So some of the moves you've heard of can happen. Some of the rumors might happen. So stuff like that.
Yeah, should be good. Should be good. Welcome to 2021, folks. If you have any New Year's resolutions that pertain to MLS, as I said, or would just make us laugh, hit us up. ExtraTime@MLSsoccer.com, 401-206-0MLS. Yes, I'm just repeating that over and over so that it sticks in my brain. We'll see you on Thursday.